Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello?
Dom, how are you, mate?
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
I'm all right. I guess, first of all, why didn't you set the scene for us? Lockdown, quarantine in the Jolly household. How's it looking?
It's not too bad at the moment. I mean, to be honest, I'm from the Generation X and the kind of job where basically lockdown at home
is day-to-day routine.
That's pretty much what I do.
Yeah.
What I do anyway. But obviously, I've got kids here, and I've got my wife here, and we got dogs. The dogs are the main problem because I've still got to go out and take the dogs. So I kind of walk out and avoid people by about 10 metres when I'm taking the dogs. But you know what? I mean, it's a horrible situation, but it's good family-wise. Like, we're watching things together. We're playing board games. I'm doing a lot of writing. So on a selfish level, so far, so good.
Were your kids all at home already, or were any of them at university or anything like that?
No, my daughter's really, well, lucky is a weird thing. She's finished school. She's in a gap year. So she wasn't at university. She's going to Oxford next year, and that would have been a nightmare to, like, just cut off half a year. And she was working as a waitress, so she got fired from that. And she was going to go off on a gap year to a place like Vietnam and stuff, and that's on hold. But for what it had to happen, it was probably the best thing. And then my son was supposed to do his GCSEs, and now he just gets predicted grades, and his predicted grades are all right. So, again, he's pretty happy with the situation, the lucky bastard.
So it's kind of a good time to be young, and especially at the age they're both at.
I think, I can't imagine having kids, you know, like really young kids being stuck like that. It must be an absolute nightmare. But at my age, I mean, if my boy didn't have Xbox, I think he'd go crazy. it's just weird times, but you got to deal with it.
Yeah, well, my landlady just gave birth to her first child on Monday, a week ago today.
Jesus Christ.
I can't even imagine how stressful going into hospital would have been.
Yeah.
And then just bringing a child into the world as it currently is, I can't even begin to imagine. And it is a weird time, but I guess there always has to be a positive in every negative. And like you said, with the situation the way it is for families, it's an opportunity for them to reconnect and get together and spend quality time. So it's not all bad.
It's not all bad. It's weird. I mean, I grew up in a war, like in Lebanon, so it's kind of odd what happens. Creativity in these situations becomes really huge. People become very creative, and there is a kind of weird special time to it. Obviously, it's appalling for lots of people, but I think when we get through it, it'll hopefully have done some good, slightly get rid of our slightly selfish, individualistic society and make us a little bit more community-minded. I don't know. This is like a reality show where everyone says this is a journey and everyone's going to love each other when we leave. We're going to be best friends, and then 3 days later, you never speak to each other. But there are good things that can come from it.
Well, you've obviously done the jungle, so you're used to, cutback living. And was it that, like everybody that you bonded with in that time, was it then the case that as soon as the experience was over, it was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll see you around, and then you don't?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of those shows, and very rare that I keep in touch. But actually, Jenny Eclair, who's in the jungle with me, and I are really, really best buddies now, so that was really nice. And then I've just done a show, which is actually going out at the end of this week, a series on BBC Two called Pilgrimage, where I walked from Belgrade to Istanbul. And actually, I've become incredibly good friends with Adrian Childs.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
Pauline McLean, who was well in Father Ted. Actually, that was really nice. So you do occasionally make really good friends on those, but rarely. Like normally, you say, "Yeah, we'll all hang out," and then nothing.
I've got a couple of questions I want to ask you, but let's break for a song first of all, Dom. We're going to start with Gang of Youths, a nice title for a situation like this. Why didn't you tell me about why the "Do Not Let Your Spirit Wane" song by these guys means a lot to you in these, you know, strange, crazy times we're living through?
You know what? I've only recently discovered Gang of Youths, and I'm literally, it was one of those situations where you think, where have you been all my life? This is a band from Melbourne. It's a great name, Gang of Youths, and I know the singer has been through particularly some tough times. I think he lost his girlfriend. I think she died. And this album is sort of about coping with that. And this song, Do Not Let Your Spirit Wane, it's so gorgeous I can't stop playing it. And then it has a sort of anger at the end. It's just incredible. I've just cancelled, well, rescheduled my tour I was doing around England. And this was the song that I played just before I came on stage. So it kind of reminds me of my tour, but it also just, I just honestly think it's one of the most beautiful songs ever done.
This dream comes like twice in a week. It's been so for years and years on repeat. And since then I've not had a full night of sleep, as it plays out the same way. I live with this girl and her kid. I'm as happy as a pig holding and shit. It's postcard, I'm settled, a pirate no more, a gypsy most with no more. But in the most exquisite of ways, no carcinogenic and humdrum malaise. And it's strange, all the things that I've run from are the things that completeness could come from.
Then a phone call to me from the ICU ward.
hospital door. ID their bodies collapsed to the floor, numb and relentlessly broken. Then I wake up with every next moment. Do not let this thing you got to go to waste. Do not let your heart be a snake. It's healed by some random disclosure of grace from some vascular breakthrough. Do not let this thing you gotta go to waste. The pain and the beauty so strange. Do not let your spirit win. Do not let your spirit win.
This is exactly the kind of song I could have imagined you using in Trigger Happy or World Shut Your Mouth back in the day. It's got that very Dom Jolly quality to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I know exactly what you're saying. I'd kill to put this on any soundtrack of anything I did at the moment. But I hate to think that my soundtracks are predictable, but actually they are. There is a thing I love. It's sort of glorious sadness.
That's exactly it. Glorious sadness. Yeah, whimsical kind of misery.
Yeah.
So you mentioned another thing there. We'll come to the tour in a moment. You mentioned Lebanon. Am I right in thinking your sister still lives there?
My sister, and my brother still lives there. And my mum, who's 91, has just moved back to live with my brother, yeah.
So what's the situation like over there with this virus? Has it reached Lebanon? What's their current situation?
I think it has reached Lebanon. They've closed the borders. You know what, I mean, Lebanon's been through so much shit that this is really not an issue for them. But I think apparently they're quite tough with it. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, there's the army is knocking people down, stopping people moving. You can't go into shops without having your temperature taken.
Do you think we'll get to that here? Do you think we need to get to that here?
We need to get to that right now. I just think it's insane. Honestly, I heard someone on the radio today, and some woman works in a prison. She's with prisoners all day, and she had met her grandchildren and her children. She was 81 or 71 or something. And you're just like, what are you doing? And like the presenter was like, well, you just shouldn't be seeing each other right now. She goes, oh, why? And it's just like, I mean, the stupidity level is insane. I saw another person who said she was in a massive queue in a supermarket, and she was asked why she was there. And she said, well, we can't let it beat us. I mean, there are people fucking dealing with the virus, so it's the fucking Nazis.
Yeah.
Just, there's some real... I mean, personally, there's a natural selection thought, really. You know, I mean, these people are so stupid.
Yeah,
there's been
no
great loss. But the problem is that they then hand it over to other people, and that's the real worry.
Yeah.
Just stay the fucking doors.
Yeah, I mean, there's a funny meme doing the rounds that's funny but also very poignant, and it says something to the effect of, our ancestors went to war to fight and die. To save us, all we need to do is sit at home and stay on the couch to save them. So stay the fuck home.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? And that sums it up. I'm having no issues with it.
Well, as a man, though, the next thing I wanted to ask you, as a man with a wanderlust spirit who likes to travel, the inset of, you know, being cooped up, is that on the horizon yet? Can you feel it creeping in?
Well, I mean, obviously, all I'm thinking about is travel, and I'm doing a lot of... reading are some of my favourite travel books. I mean, the isolation is not keeping my travel bug away. So I'm basically reading all my favourite travel books. I've just reread Patrick Leigh Fermor, who wrote A Time of Gifts and Between the Woods and the Water, and he walked from London to Istanbul in 1933, I think.
Wow.
And he walked through Nazi Germany and stuff. And I've just walked from Belgrade to Istanbul for this show, Pilgrimage. So it kind of brought a bit of that back. And also it's just like a time machine. And then also I'm reading this amazing book by Mark Twain. Mark Twain's sort of the thing that kicked him off. He went on the very, very first sort of passenger cruise around the Mediterranean in 1869. And it's so achingly funny. And yet it's so weird. You kind of think back then people didn't take the piss out of people. People didn't give each other nicknames. But, it could be right now. It's so modern.
Wow.
And it's like a time machine with a perfect travel companion. It's called The Innocents Abroad, and I think it's my favourite travel book ever. It's amazing.
I'm going to have to check that out. So you were in the middle of your Holiday Snaps tour when this set in. The last time we saw each other was when we did the live Q&A last summer. So am I right in thinking, did that give you the taste for wanting to be back on the stage? Because the tour that you booked up was massive. There were so many dates.
Oh, it was crazy. And just so insane, I think it was 56 nights, and it was just, I was going all over. I'm writing a new book at the moment called Such Miserable Weather about England, about how I've kind of avoided travelling around England, even though I've been everywhere else. So it was useful for that, and I was really loving it. And the tour was basically, it was kind of trying to explain what I explained to you, like why I've got different types of fans. I've got people like me for my comedy and people like me for my travel stuff. And I think often people ask, why is the squirrel guy in North Korea? Like, what is that about?
Yeah.
So really, it was about trying to bring all that together. It was showing how I've always been into travel from a kid. You know, I was into Tintin. I wanted to go to all the places Tintin traveled to, and I've now done that. And when I was a kid growing up, the people I really looked up to were travel writers and foreign correspondents. So I've just always had that bug. And, and obviously I've got a vast amount of photos and clips from comedy and serious travel I've done, and my wife refuses to look at them because she's annoyed that I got without her. So I thought, well, what's the best way to do it? So I've kind of, and it was going down really, really well. I have to say, it was the first time I felt, it's only my second tour ever, it's the first time I felt really comfortable on stage, and I'd really got it nailed. The reviews were really good. So, I mean, obviously I had to stop it. It would be crazy, but it's so sad because I was just loving being on tour. But it's all been rescheduled now, optimistically, for September onwards, and then I've got an extra 50 dates next year as well. So
wow,
very exciting.
Well, let's pause for another song, then we'll come back and chat some more. The next one is Love and Rockets with American Dream. Tell us about this one, Dom.
Well, I love Love and Rockets. Love and Rockets are a spin-off from probably one of the ultimate art rock goth bands, Bauhaus, and this is two members of Love and Rockets, of Bauhaus, going off to make Love and Rockets, and they're a phenomenal band. They have this kind of it's got the sadness that you think you'd, you know, from most of my choices. And it's got this kind of ethereal, really overly produced feel to it that I absolutely love. And it's called An American Dream. It's from their album called Express, which is a fantastic album, sort of early 80s. And I've just been into this album for so long. It's just one of those things I never, never, never tire of. And I just think it's a stunning song.
and Bauhaus were going to be playing some shows as well, weren't they? In May, I think it was. They were going to be doing Brixton Academy. There was a couple more. Did you get yourself tickets for those? Not that it's happening anymore, but...
I don't. I'm so bad at getting tickets for things. Like, when I find out things are happening, and then I kind of just never... I never know what I'm doing, so I never get organised for it. The only tickets I had for gigs coming up was I was going to see Nick Cave.
Yeah, at the O2, was it?
Cancelled as well. No, I was going to see him in Cardiff, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've still never seen Nick Cave live, you know, never. I need to.
No, nor have I. Nor have I. I mean, I... When I... I did this book called the Hezbollah Hiking Club. I walked across Lebanon last year, and pretty much all the way across, I was listening to the Skeleton Tree. I mean, there's a film about the making of the Skeleton Tree, which is just stunning. The Nick Cave films are amazing. You know, 20,000 Days on Earth, Skeleton Tree one is incredible. And there's a song called Magneto on it, which is I'm in love with. And also the ship song is, I haven't chosen a Nick Cave for this, but I was tempted.
Well, it's hard, isn't it, when you've only got five?
Oh, yeah, but it changed all the time. But at the moment, and it was very easy, these five, actually.
So the show itself you were doing, was it essentially like, I guess, a slideshow of pictures and then you tell anecdotes that sort of contextualise them? And were you scripting it, or were you kind of freestyling it on the night?
Well, no, because I've always freestyled stuff. I always ad-lib, and it's always how I've done everything. And it's kind of exciting, but it just fills me with fear. And actually, I thought, for once, I've really got to fucking work at this. So I spent ages writing it up, and it is genuinely a PowerPoint.
I hope it's
a bit more exciting than your average PowerPoint. It's a PowerPoint, and I nailed it. I mean, I got it really good. I was worried I didn't have enough stuff. It was supposed to be 45 minutes on each half, and then the first half I came off, my promoter said, you've just done an hour and a half. So I apologise to the people of Coventry. I went a bit long, but I cut it right down, and then it's 45 minutes, so, and it's sharp as anything. And it's basically, photos, amusing things I've seen, weird signs, and then clips from things, little bits of stuff I shot in North Korea. It's all sorts of weird stuff.
Does the situation we're in right now remind you of anything you've experienced in your lifetime before, Dom? Because it's new ground, isn't it?
I mean, growing up in Lebanon, we were often we were being shelled and bombed for up to 3-4 weeks, and we'd sit in the basement and basically just have to sit it out, and that was much worse. We didn't have the internet, we didn't have any connection with other people, and also it was just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the terrifying thing about this particular bug, this virus, it reminds me a lot of when I went to Chernobyl for my book, The Dark Tourist.
Yeah,
when I
went to great Chernobyl, book. They love that book.
Thank you. They call the radiation, which is what you're afraid of in Chernobyl, they call it the invisible enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't see it, and you get paranoid about whether it's coming into you or not. And that feeling really reminds me, when you're walking around, you're thinking, oh my God, your tongue starts feeling metallic, and you're like, am I ingesting radiation? You know, and that feeling is very much the feeling you get when you're walking around at the moment now with coronavirus, because obviously it's invisible, and that's what's so terrifying.
How do you think the government, at least in the UK, have dealt with it so far?
I think they've been utterly appalling. Like, I was doing the tour, I didn't know whether to stop or not. I think we should have stopped probably 2 weeks earlier if someone had given us proper advice, but, you know, you can't cancel unless they actually cancel. And then when they get to the stage where they're actually telling people what to do, that rather than enforcing it, they're telling, they're suggesting. Now, human beings need to be forced. Like, if you see people and you think, oh, they're overreacting, they're not going to do it. And I think Boris Johnson just appears utterly incapable of making a decision. He's not a leader. He's a sham. He's a fake. And he's been called out here. And he's really, I mean, I'm incredibly impressed with the Chancellor. I think he's a much more decisive and impressive character. And then the idiot Dominic Cummings, who's this sort of cod science geek who sort of thought he could sort it out with herd immunity, which is just utter kind of just shit science, basically. And I think he's going to he's going to be responsible for a lot of deaths. I think we went 2 weeks too late.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because even when they got to the point where they were closing down the pubs, finally, they still had schools open. And you think, well, where's the logic there?
Totally. And then you've got that twat who owns Wetherspoons, you know, the same twat that went on about Brexit. And now he's urging people to go into his own pubs just to line his own pockets. And people still listen to these idiots. I mean, you've got idiots like Friends of Farage that are going on about how the whole thing is faked and we shouldn't, you know, we didn't close the pubs in the Blitz. You're like, I mean, how dim are these people, and how dim are you to even listen to these fucking morons?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, as you say, though, it will reveal the fraudulence and the phonies and, you know, give people who are actually capable at their job the chance to shine, and we can live in hope, right?
Yeah, I mean, right now, point scoring's not, you know, I'm angry with it, but point scoring's not what it's about. We've just got to all get together and sort it out. I mean, there'll be a time afterwards for maybe looking at how people reacted. I mean, to be fair, no, you know, this is such an unprecedented and crazy thing that, you know, no one's planned for this. But I just think Boris Johnson is a chancellor, and he's not just like Trump is. It's just these are not the people you want to be in charge when something really serious is going on.
Hell no. The third song you've picked is by a pretty new band. I know these guys. Very interesting, very unique. Nothing But Thieves. And the song is Sorry. How did you discover these guys, Don? How did they get on your radar?
Well, these guys were big Trigger Happy fans, and actually me and my sort of work partner, Matt Campion, we made a music video for them. We made the song Broken Machine, and we did a special for mental health charity. And they're very into kind of their mental health awareness. Some of the band have had issues with that. And they're just a really lovely bunch of guys. It's quite funny. They look almost like a band that's been put together. They got one guy looks like he's in Nirvana. The lead singer is kind of very interesting looking. And then there's another guy looks like he's in Coldplay. They look like a band that shouldn't gel together.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They've been put together. But they're not at all. They're you know, they grew up, they were mates. I think it's Southend they're from. And they're just phenomenal. And this song, Sorry, is just beautiful. They do an acoustic version of it as well, which is incredible. But I love this band, Nothing But Thieves, Sorry.
You might kill me with desire, want me tighter than no wire. It's something that you do to me, I run away like mercury. And I know you think it's rough when you're trying to patch us up. And I say, honey, what is love? You just say I drink too much. Maybe I'm defective, or maybe I'm dumb. I'm sorry, so sorry for what I've done. Maybe I'm bad natured, or maybe I'm young. I'm sorry, so sorry for what I've done. And I'm the t-shirt that I wear, and pick the thorns out of my hair. I broke your heart so carelessly, but made the pieces part of me. And now it hurts what we've become, 'cause you taught me. Stop.
So what are you doing to combat the boredom, Dom? You've been reading travel books, as you say. You've been playing board games with your family, obviously taking the dog out for a walk, getting a bit of exercise. What else has been sort of your coping mechanism for just trying to stay, I guess, in a routine and active and distracted and productive?
Well, I'm doing a lot of writing. I've got a new book I'm writing, which is about travelling around Britain. I've got a sitcom, which has been optioned by Working Title, which I'm on about the fifth draft. So I'm just...
I remember you working on that when we first met up. Yeah, it's been a while in the process, has it?
Well, I mean, I keep getting sidetracked because I have to go off and do other things, and things move very slowly. Like, if your entire life is just trying to get a sitcom going or a film going, I think I'd kill myself, because it just, you know, you take ages doing it, you send it in, then it's like a month, and someone sends notes back. If that was your entire life, you'd go mental. But as it is, I've got lots on the go, so I just try and keep it all going. Earworm, my podcast, which is kind of weird phone calls, a new series of that is coming out on Audible in, I think, the end of April, and I'm just trying to work out with Matt how we can do another series sort of remotely from, you know, him at home and me at home. So having a look at that. But really, writing is what I'm going to do. And then I've got this great idea for a film. I've never written a film, and I'm going to try and write a film about a bunch of... I did Total Wipeout ages ago. I went to Argentina.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the weirdest bunch of celebs. And I've got this idea about a bunch of celebs who basically go to some foreign country to do a show like that, and then suddenly there's a revolution, and they're left on their own, and they have to use their terrible celeb skills to get themselves out of trouble. So that's the idea. So
amazing.
I've got further than that. I'm going to start that. Yes, it should be quite cool.
I love it. Loads going on. I like the way you've always been a man of many, you know, many talents with your fingers in many pies as well. And I guess in a time like this...
You have to, though.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in that situation now because I usually DJ a lot to supplement the podcast stuff and my writing and everything. And now, obviously, all the DJing has been postponed until further notice.
Yeah, DJing's gone, isn't it? Completely. No way you can remotely DJ. You need some sort of mass silent disco.
Well, I've been seeing DJs that I know live stream DJ sets, which I think is the most pointless thing ever. Like, I can understand... Yeah, and just watch a DJ press play. Like, I can understand if it's somebody playing an acoustic guitar or it's, you know, a musical performance, but a live stream DJ set with no crowd in front of them, I can't really see the appeal of that.
I know. It's not easy being a DJ.
I guess people are just trying to do what they can, though, aren't they? They're trying to think outside the box and just do whatever they can to either hustle a living or just get by the day.
It is crazy how everyone is doing stuff online now. I mean, obviously, and I think there's going to be a massive, I mean, God, poor commissioning people at the end of this, because just the amount of ideas and stuff that people have created while they're stuck at home, you know, writers actually having to write, it's going to be a deluge.
Well, my friend's wife is a midwife as well, and apparently the midwife community is terrified at the influx of newborns come December.
9 months from now, oh my God, yeah.
Dom, let's break for your second to last song, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap things up and have a little chat about what's coming up in the imminent future. Bon Iver, do you say Ivor or Iver? How do you say it?
Well, it is Bon Iver. He's a French Canadian, and Bon Iver means good winter. It's not his real name, obviously. And he's a kind of he looks like a bear. He looks like a man that lives in a log cabin in the middle of Quebec, and I think he pretty much is.
Didn't he do that for his first album? Wasn't his first album literally just him in a cabin in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah. I mean, this is like Grizzly Adams has made an indie album, really. And I heard his first thing. I mean, Skinny Love was incredible. There's a song called Flume that I absolutely loved. There's just something very stark about it, very isolated, I suppose, and that's probably from his lifestyle. There's just something very vulnerable about his singing, and I absolutely love it. And this song is called Hey Ma, and I heard this when I was driving across America last summer, and I pretty much couldn't stop playing it. It's just such a beautiful, beautiful song. So it's Bon Iver with Hey Ma.
Outside, I took it remote. I wanted a bed. Tell the story or it goes. Tell the story or it goes. Full time, you talk your money up while it's living in a coal mine. Told time to call your ma. Hey ma, hey ma. Told vote, you know you're moping up. Well, you wanted it to hold that. You're back and forth with that. I waited outside. I was talking on door. Passage, you know, I wanted all that mine, sugar. I wanted all mine. I had a heavy mind, sugar. I took it, it was right. Full time, you talk your money up while it's living in a coal mine. Told time to call your mind. Hey, my, hey, my. You know you mop it up. Well, you wanted it to hold that.
Beautiful music is exactly what we need right now, isn't it? Escapist, ethereal,
yeah,
sweeping music.
There are probably two different schools of thoughts. You know, there's some people that think we should all be listening to ABBA, Dancing Queen and stuff, but there's nothing that depresses me more than supposedly happy music. I'm really couldn't be happier with sad music in a funny way, but that's because I used to be a goth, I think. So, yeah, I love it.
So you have postponed dates that have been rescheduled for, all going to plan, September. That's when the Holiday Snaps tour is going to pick back up.
Yeah, so all the dates that were going have been rescheduled apart from three, and any of your tickets are just totally valid for that. And that goes through September, October, November.
And there's a Birmingham date in that run, isn't there?
There is a Birmingham date, yeah.
I'll have to get down to that and come see you. Can't wait.
Yeah, do. That'd be great. And then I think there's another 56 dates next year, but I haven't announced them yet. But I'm very excited about that. So now this tour's really gone well, and it's really good. It's worth coming to, actually, genuinely.
Is it going to be the same like show next year, just other cities, or are you going to do a different format?
No, it's going to be the same show because it's gone so well. I mean, I change it a bit every night anyway, to be honest.
Of course, yeah, because you're making it up on the spot.
Yeah, so I chuck stuff in, and there's enough room to riff in various places, but it is. There's been a lot of demand for it, and you know, there are a lot of places that haven't seen it, so I'm very happy to keep going with that.
Great. Well, good for you, Dom. I think a lot of people, when they do go on tour as well, they only tend to do the big cities, so when you go to these sort of more off-the-beaten-track towns, they're appreciative of any form of entertainment because so many entertainers overlook them.
You know what? That's so true. And I really, really love going to these places. I've been to places I'm not ashamed to say I've never heard of.
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea where they were. And they've all just been incredible. I mean, especially writing this book, it's really interesting anyway, because it takes me to places that you just wouldn't go to normally. But you're quite right. There are certain places where literally, like, no one goes. Like, when you look at the other things playing there, it's all fucking tribute bands. It's unbelievable, mm-hmm. this tribute band circuit. You know, CDAC and John Bovey and stuff. And I'm like, I'm sure they're good, and I'm sure I really would enjoy the Australian Doors. But you know what? Just come and see something original. So they love it when something comes in. And they are incredibly appreciative. And a lot of these places are run by volunteers and stuff, which is just amazing. So I've had such a good time and loved being on tour, and I just can't wait to get back.
And with the book, have you been linking up with, like, local people in each area? Or have you just been doing your research and going around on your own? How have you been using the time on the road to explore Britain, as it were?
Well, there are certain things I wanted to go and see anyway, like Birmingham. I'd always felt, I just don't like Birmingham. And I thought, that's my fault, not Birmingham's. So I decided to really give it another go. And, like, I realised why I didn't like Birmingham. It's because if you don't know Birmingham and you rock up, it's just really difficult to... It's not a walking city, particularly.
No, not at all.
There's so many motorways. And then I discovered the canals, and then I discovered different areas. I've stayed in Birmingham. I stayed actually on the campus of Birmingham University for a week while I was doing the tour. And I've really got fond of it and found some amazing places. So it's about really giving places a second chance. And then also, I use Twitter a lot to basically say I'm going to be, you know, in Yarm tomorrow. Anyone recommend something good or somewhere to see? And obviously most of them are, get the fuck out of our town, piss off. But occasionally you get someone like that suggests something really good. So no, it's been brilliant.
Isn't that the great thing about the internet as well? Although it does have its downsides, you can just go online now and go, I'm going to be here next week. Any tips? And as you say, you will get some jokers who are like, well, don't go to wherever. But then you do actually have genuine people who are in the know, can share that knowledge.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and it's better than a Google search, isn't it?
Much better. It's one of the great things about having sort of a lot of followers you don't know. It means you've got a real random selection. And so I use it as a sort of wisdom of crowds. I was in Cambodia once and said, landed Phnom Penh, what should I do? And obviously a lot of people said, go fuck yourself. But then some guy said, oh, we vaguely know each other through someone. I'm a photographer here. And he took me out. And we just had an amazing time. And he showed me these incredible bits of Phnom Penh I'd have never seen. So yeah, it's really useful for me as a travel thing.
Have you got a release date in mind for the book, Dom?
Well, it's an audio, but it's really interesting. So Audible, who are the sort of audio people, this is the first time I've done it. They've commissioned it as an audio book. So normally I'd write a book, it would be published as a book, and then it would go out as an audio. I'd then read it, and it would go out as an audio book. This time, I'm writing the book, but it won't be published as a book first. It will firstly go out as an audio book exclusive for a year on Audible, and then I'll sell it on as a book.
Nice.
It's kind of things, it's quite an interesting way to do it. So it means it'll be really quick. I've got to give it in June. And I would have thought it would be out pretty soon after that.
So you're recording at home, or you'd be going into a studio to do that?
Well, I normally go into a studio, but yeah, you're quite right at the moment. I'll probably have to record it at home, I don't know.
Dom, thanks so much for taking the time, mate. It's been a pleasure chatting to you, as it always is. Final sort of thoughts. What do you think, you know, when we come out of this, when quote-unquote normality resumes, do you see a positive new world that we're going to enter into? Because I'm kind of hoping and thinking that what's happened is going to stop a lot of greed and, as you were saying earlier, self-interest. I mean, we can live in hope, right? Do you think that perhaps when everything, the dust does settle and we begin to pick up, you know, society where we left off, do you think there'll be a newfound humility and appreciation and community?
For about 3 days. It's business as usual. It's a shame. You know, all these great things are happening. The fact that no one's going out in China means the pollution has gone down. You know, and then these stories about the canals in Venice are, you know, becoming see-through, and all this stuff sounds great. People helping each other out. I mean, people are basically decent. I've always found that filming and in times of trouble and stuff. But there are also a really serious amount of arseholes around as well. And I'm afraid they're always going to be there. So, you know what? We should all try and be nicer to each other, but it'll be business as usual 3 days after this is all over.
I love it. Not an optimist, not a pessimist, a realist.
Yeah.
Let's end with Marillion. Tell me about this track by them, Incubus, and then we'll say our goodbyes.
Okay, so this is a very controversial choice, and this will probably distance some people, because this is very much not my usual sort of stuff. You know, Marillion prog rock, This is the Marillion with Fish, who was there for their first four albums, and I'm absolutely, from 17 onwards, I knew every word to these four albums. Marillion was my second gig I ever went to. I just loved it. Trigger Happy, actually, weirdly, is named after a Marillion song called Ricochet. There's a song in it, there's a lyric, are you Trigger Happy, Trigger Happy.
There you go, I never knew that.
From Marillion, no one does, actually, it's too embarrassing, but I just love Marillion. I think Fish, or Derek Dick in his real name, is a really extraordinary lyricist, an amazing voice. And when I did a show 2 years ago, I was filming with Ollie Smith, the wine expert from Saturday Kitchen, and it was about beer. It was called How Beer Changed the World. And we were up in the Arctic Circle, and it was dark and we were all day, and we were sitting in a car, and he played Marillion. He said, you'll hate this. And I go, oh my God, I love Marillion. And so we kind of both listened to Marillion. Then he goes, oh, I'm friends with Fish. So he rang up Fish from the Arctic Circle, and I spoke to Fish. And that was just a really very surreal moment. And then walking across Lebanon for my book, The Hezbollah Hiking Club, I was doing a lot of listening. And one of the songs I listened to all the time was this song called Incubus. And I remember listening to this at school. It's weird. I think at the beginning of it, you won't like it. Like, first minute, possibly, it'll put you off. But hang in there, because there's two chorus moments that I think are literally some of the most beautiful moments in all of music. I genuinely do. I think it's astonishing moments in this. So I hope you enjoy it. This is Marillion, Incubus. Stay safe out there.
Stage. You can brush me under the carpet. You can't hide me under the stairs. The custodian of your private fears. Your leading actor of yesteryear. Who is you called out of the alleys of obscurity? Sentenced to rejection in the morass of anonymity. You who I directed with a lover's will. You who I let hypnotize the lens. You who I let bathe in the spotlight's glare. Just like a grease paint mask.